This is the Upreneur FM podcast. We bring you the strategies and resources you need to build, market, and monetize a profitable, future-proof business around your knowledge and expertise. And now, here's your host, international business mentor and best-selling author, Chris Ducker.
Yes, hello and welcome to the show. Before we get started, if you're serious about making the next 90 days truly count in the growth of your business, I'd like to invite you to our next quarterly deep dive planning session, which is coming up very soon. It's your chance to work on your business uninterrupted for a few hours alongside myself, some special guests, and your fellow entrepreneurs. So for more info and to grab one of the limited spots that we've got available, visit upreneur.com/deep dive. Right, let's get into the show. So today I'm speaking with Skye Barber, who is a business consultant exclusively working with female-led agency owners, and she's all about helping them get more time, make more money, and ultimately create more memories in their life, in their business, who they serve, their family, and all that good stuff as well. It's a great conversation with Skye, and actually, we dive deep in a number of different directions here. We talk about her ecosystem of products and offers. We talk about her background in pig farming. Yes, you heard that right. And a host of other bits and pieces as well. Really, really interesting and just genuine takeaway after takeaway with Skye. So here we go.
Upreneur FM, your number one personal brand business podcast.
So Skye, welcome to the Upreneur podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk today.
Oh, it's all my pleasure. This is going to be so much fun. So, I mean, for those that maybe don't know you and what you're all about, they've never heard of Skye before, give us a little bit, and let's not go too down the rabbit hole, because otherwise we'll have nothing to talk about in the next half an hour. But like, what is it that you do and who do you do it for? I think that's a simple way to start things off.
Okay, well, I am so passionate about freeing up talented, responsible women in business who are in done-for-you services. So they're typically agencies, think marketing agencies, accountants. They are providing the service and they're technically brilliant. They become the bottleneck so quickly. So what I do is I help them find their zone of genius and we create seamless systems and a brilliant, small but mighty team to take the work off their plate so they can actually do the things they love and grow the business.
Yeah, so you are talking my kind of language here. I mean, that's basically what I've lived for the last 20 years. So this is great.
Well, yeah. I apologize for that side.
Yeah, we're going to have a great chat. So, I mean, when did this start for you then? When did the brand of Skye actually start? And how did you sort of initially start marketing your expertise in this role?
Yeah, so I've run this business for just over 5 years now. Okay. But actually, I've been doing this my entire life.
Right.
So I'm going to make a long story very short. Very dyslexic at school and likely ADHD too. And what I recognize is there were things that I am brilliant at, like talking and being on stage. And there was a lot of stuff I was totally rubbish at, even in school, like how to spell and actually read. So I used to, unknowingly, and it sounds a bit manipulative, but find people around me who were great at the things that I wasn't so good at. And what I learned through school and then through my career was I was always brilliant at recognizing the stuff I could do, the stuff I couldn't do, and finding other people's strengths to fill my gaps. Mm. And that's how I got headhunted, got fast-tracked through the John Lewis management scheme, and I managed to really fast-forward my career. So at the age of 27, I was running supermarkets, so Waitrose. I had 250 members of staff, £45 million turnover I was accountable for. And I suddenly started looking around being like, whoa, okay, I love this job, but I know I've always wanted to have my own business. There's only one problem. All the entrepreneurs in my life around me, and I was very fortunate to see lots of them, they worked so many hours because they could never find anyone who was good as them in business. And what I suddenly realized is I had the solution. You know, I was privileged to be exposed to amazing management training and seeing like creating systems in large organizations. How do you hire and find the right people? How do you have those difficult conversations? I'd been trained and that was my norm. And yet all these entrepreneurs around me had never had that kind of business training. They were just amazing at the stuff they were amazing at. So I suddenly realized, I was like, whoa, I have a skill set that entrepreneurs need, but they just haven't had the training on. So how can I support entrepreneurs free themselves up? I can take them this team training and the system training. So that's kind of how it all started. And being that young girl at a netball match, waiting for her dad to turn up on the sidelines, and he couldn't because he was working. He looked after us financially. I'm one of four children. I know you have lots of children as well.
Four children as well, yeah.
Yeah, I'm the oldest of four. And my dad was so responsible. He was out there earning the money. And my mom gave up her own business to look after us four. And I was like, whoa, you can either be a great parent or you can earn financially. I want to do both.
Right.
I thought that was in corporate. It's not. It's in my own business. And now I know how to scale, have scalable success, and it not all be on me.
Yeah.
It wasn't all smooth sailing, though, I would say.
No. And we'll talk about that in a little while. But I mean, like, I think what's really key here is the fact that you notice quite early on in your life that, you know, you wanted to have both. You wanted to be a great parent and have a great career.
Yeah.
You didn't necessarily want to have to do the corporate thing, and that, you know, you recognize that it was doable on your own terms.
Yeah.
And I think that's where a lot of people let themselves down early on in their career. Anyway, a lot of them come to the realization later on in life when they hit their late 30s, early 40s. And that's when they start their own businesses. I remember reading an article a good few years ago now in Time Magazine that in the United States, something like 70% of the new businesses that had been started that year had been started by people that were in the 50s. And that astounded me. I was astounded by that statistic because it was like, holy moly, people are waiting until like my age now to start their own business. I've been doing it 20 years already, right? So it was like, it was a massive realization. There's holy moly, people genuinely do wait too long to get started with this stuff. But the fact that you noticed it so early on, I think is really key.
But I totally overthought it, let imposter syndrome get in the way. And it took me an extra 3 years, having made the decision I was going to leave, to actually staying in it. You know, a paycheck is comfortable. I was really good at my job. I felt like I had autonomy. I saw my boss like once a month in my role, and I loved it. Put family pressure around you saying, why would you leave? I remember my brother-in-law saying to me, it doesn't get any better than what you've got at Sky. Like, why would you leave? And it made me really think, like, is this irresponsible if I step away from my big paycheck and go it alone? Could I actually make money by myself? So I started off with some experiments and I thought, I'm just going to take the pressure off and I'm going to make it fun. I read an amazing book by John Williams called, I think it was Screw Work, Break Free. And he helped me basically, he was my first mentor I invested in one-to-one. And he helped me take the steps to like just go out there and make money, which started off as like an Airbnb product that I sold on a website. And instead of doing £200, I sold it for £2,000 and did this whole like British country stay with me. And when I remember that first £2,000, this Chinese family handed over me in cash and I had these wad of 50s. I was like, oh, I can make money. I can make money now. This is fun. And I had that trust that I was like, I can give up the paycheck. Mm-hmm. And I can undo it, and it's not irresponsible. And I also thought, I have to do this now because if I ever want to start a family, like I'm not gonna. I know what I'm like. I'm driven by responsibility. I've said that word quite a few times, but we can feel like we need to look after other people. And if I have a family, am I going to be able to leave my paycheck? So I had to do it sooner rather than later.
Yeah, no, I hear you on that. So when you kicked off then and you got started, like what platforms or channels or whatever were you using to sort of, I guess, showcase your expertise, attract the right type of clients? Like was there any sort of target audience that you were zoned in on and how were you attracting them?
Okay, so the first round of my own business was actually in public speaking training, because what I believed had fast-tracked my career was having like a young female's voice in a very male-dominated industry, having the confidence to speak and get on stages. And that had always been the way I'd kind of fast-track my career. So that's the first rendition of my business. I first thought, like, I can't market. I can't do this. I'm not good enough. And so I ended up attracting a business partner and almost going into business with him. So he was an expert in his field, and I felt the need, because I hadn't read your book, to piggyback off someone else's experience
okay.
because I wasn't good enough yet. I soon realized that that he was going to shaft me, and I would outgrown him in the next year or two, and then I needed to go by myself. So the first thing I did was set up a 3-month one-to-one package, and I literally spoke to family and friends about what I was offering. And I remember the first client that worked for me, my mom's good friend, and I said, I'll do it for free. And she gave me £50 cash. She's like, I'm not leaving here until you take this money. And I remember exactly where I was. And it makes me smile so much, because I'm like, that £50 cash, and I now charge thousands of pounds to work in a different field. But it has been a growth journey. It's been an iteration. And, you know, firm believer that, you know, there's not such thing as success overnight or it being a straight line. It is a roller coaster. And some days have been fantastic. And at those early days, it was terrifying. Mm-hmm. But I used my network to begin with. And then from that, I then built my social media. I started just posting content, started doing videos. I ran a free event in my local community, and I just put it on Eventbrite, thought maybe no one will turn up, but people did. And that's how it just started, through using social media and contacts that I had to just share what it was that I was doing. The business then evolved and changed over time as my confidence grew. And that's when I started putting in more kind of formal types of marketing funnels and learning and going all around the world, learning from coaches of how to put the foundations in to grow my business.
What kind of relationships do you feel? I mean, you've mentioned coaches or mentors a couple of times. Like, what kind of relationships for you now, maybe not so much at the beginning, but now, are important to you? And like, how do you go about making those relationships and friendships and whatnot?
I mean, I actually got quite tearful even when you're just talking about that, because when I think about what I do in business, it is all about relationships.
Well, yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
And I think the key relationships in my career right now are the people closest to me. So that is my right-hand man, my husband, my right-hand woman, Hannah, in my team. And then it's about the kind of quite a curated small network of people, friends that I've got, who some are in this industry, some aren't. But the point is, we get each other. You know, they're often moms with small children, not always, but they are people who have their own business, who are driven and have similar values. So I've met some of those online events who have then, you know, one of my greatest friends I've only met twice or three times in person ever. And other friends who I've met through business have become great personal friends.
Yep.
So the relationships are people who are sometimes are ahead of me as well, that are just have the same outlook on life, and that come at things wanting to help and support one another. I think that's really key.
Yeah.
People that you can be really frank with, honest with, and just be yourself around.
One of my most important relationships is with a lady called Carrie Wilkerson. And Carrie wrote a book called The Barefoot Executive many moons ago. And I mean, she's a legend in the speaking game in the United States. And we had met each other, or rather, we had known each other online for a good few years, and then eventually ended up meeting each other the first time in 2014 at an event that we were both keynoting over in the US. And we just instantly, it was just instant brother and sister. Like, it was just instant. She's a year older than me, which I never forget to mention to her, which she never forgets to tell me that she hates that I mention it to her. And, you know, I call her my big sister. And, you know, I don't have a sister, right? And it was like always one of those things where, whenever we're together, she just gives it to me straight. And we don't have to talk to each other every week or even every month, but whenever we get together and we you know, put the world to rights, so to speak, like, she will give it to me straight. And there aren't many people in the world that do that, but those that do it are the ones that I keep closest, right? It's my wife, it's my daughter who works with me.
Yeah.
You know, it is Carrie, it's maybe a handful of other friends, and everybody else, they're just acquaintances, really. Like, I don't need more friends in life. I've got enough friends. You know, what I need is the ability to be able to affect as much change as possible on the people that I work and serve. And, you know, those that kind of come across my work, and whether it's reading a book or listening to this show or seeing me on stage, if I can just, if there's a little twinkle, if there's a little tweet that I can give them, then I look at that as a massive win a lot of the time as well. But relationships, I've always said, they should be treasured. They shouldn't be used. is something that I think is, particularly in the online business, there's a lot of kind of you scratch my back and I'll share my email list with you kind of thing. I'm not interested in that stuff at all. And
unless
for me,
it's genuine. Yeah, it's genuinely like helpful. I agree.
Super key.
I think the slight difference as well in my setup that I didn't mention at the start is I'm a farmer's wife. And I don't know if you know anything about the farming community, but we basically all live together.
Yeah.
So there's me and my husband. We have a separate house, but I'm 200 meters from my in-laws. I'm 200 meters from one set of brother and sister-in-law and their children. And I'm about 5 minutes from the other. My family are all like that as well. And I've grown up with generation of generation. In fact, one of the oldest small family businesses, department stores in Scotland. So my whole background is family business. And I actually attract a lot of clients who work with or hire family members, because like you, with your daughter, it can often be such a brilliant advantage within your business. But I also know the absolute best things and the absolute worst things around mixing business and emotions with people who you are really close with.
Yeah.
So I think the relationships I have with my family, I'm the person everyone goes to like understand the dynamics of the people and the mix within the family as well as within teams. And when I fundamentally, and I never talk about this from a marketing perspective, but when I fundamentally think about what am I excellent at, it is around understanding relationships and the dynamic between people and how do you get the best out of both things. And I suppose naturally, without meaning to sound like I use my friends, but naturally, I think that's what I create in a friendship group around me too. And also knowing how I can best serve and be helpful to the people I really care about too. Yeah. And choosing to spend quality time with people, I think is important.
Oh, totally. So, all right, let's shift gears a little bit. Let's talk about offers. Let's talk about how you're making money, because I know everyone's going to be like, I want to be like Sky when I grow up. So let's figure out how Sky makes a cash. What does your current ecosystem look like from in terms of products, services, offers, that kind of thing?
Yeah. So I run at the moment, I've got a range of low ticket offers. My favorite being Streamline for Success, my very small £37 digital product, which is kind of a self-liquidating funnel, right the way through to my more business consulting one-to-one work, where it's a three-month container. I sell that for £10,000 plus VAT for 3 months, and there's an ongoing retainer after that. Mm-hmm. And within that is a very much a white glove experience. Like I become part of your team. I only take four or five people on at a time. Mm-hmm. And it is very much, we build out your operating system for you. We help find and hire your right-hand person. We train your team. I'll go and run team workshops and things for your team if that's relevant.
Okay.
So it's very immersive. But as you can imagine, that's not particularly scalable.
No.
My challenge is I'm an all or nothing girl and I love to be all in with my clients. So what I've done is create a hybrid group offer, but with like a one-to-one element to it called Make More. It's about making more time to make more money, to make more memories with the people that you really want to spend time with. So it's for those service providers and it's a 6 month container whereby my team and I support you and it's at that more intimate group level.
So, so you've got the low price digital,
yeah.
37 quid, and then you've got the 10 grand all in, all singing, all dancing with a retainer kind of rolling after that. And then Make More. So what's Make More priced at?
Make More's priced at, well, it's going to be £5,000 for 6 months, but I'm going to be running it. This is the first iteration of this one. We're running it £3,000 as the first 10, and then I'll be putting the price up to five.
I love those price points. I think those price points are fantastic because it's enough to be able to keep out the people that really aren't ready for it, quite frankly, yet, but also low enough to make it accessible for people who want to go from where they are to where they want to get to.
Exactly. And that's what I recognize. Not everyone is willing or able to invest the £10,000. And I wanted to have something that was suitable because my audience are six-figure, multi-six-figure people. This is what it's for, kind of scaling up to that £500,000. So I don't want it to be just at the £37 level price point, but equally, it's important to have something for different audiences. I used to have a group program called Time to Lead, which was at the £1,000 price point, and it was brilliant. I had 60 or 70 people go through it and amazing testimonials and feedback. This is a couple of years ago off the back of the pandemic. But what I found was I was attracting a lot of people who hadn't sorted their marketing side of things out. So their number one problem was, where do I find leads? That's not the problem I solve. I solve that problem for when people are like oversubscribed for what they're provide, the service they're providing, and they can't find a clone of themselves. And what I was recognizing was the price point was drawing in, as well as my marketing message, you know, yes, was drawing in a different clientele who I could help, but I didn't feel like, and this is where, you know, I try and be as authentic as possible. I didn't feel like I was doing them justice because their number one problem was, how do I find the next lead? And that wasn't the problem I was solving for them.
Yeah. Yeah. So have you had any sort of like, and I know this is a loaded question because you're an entrepreneur, but I'll ask it. Where have you gone wrong? What failures have you had? What lessons have you learned?
Oh my gosh. So many.
This is where you say, how long's the interview going to be?
No, I will keep it short. But you know, I am a person who, like a lot of entrepreneurs, we can be very hard on ourselves and think about all the things we could have done differently, and hindsight being a great thing. But one thing, before I go dive into everything I would have done differently, I had that moment when I was speaking at an event in Australia and had a VIP client that paid for my Australia trip out there with my husband last week. And my business was running as business as usual. And I said to James, do you know what? The sky now is cross that I haven't made the progress I want to, but the sky of 5 years ago would have done anything to create the success I've created now around two small children, having two children at that time. And I think it's really important that we can always, if you're driven and ambitious, you always want to do things better and you always want more, but it's also about recognizing the positives. One of my biggest mistakes was when I was getting actually real traction of success. So I've sold maybe 600 of the small digital products. I then was scaling. I was scaling it with ads at the time. That was converting really well through a webinar funnel into my group program. I'd already had a 30 or something through it. I had a cohort of 30 at the time. You know, I was really challenging myself to know everyone's pet name, child name, biggest problem, husband's name on these programs. And I thought, what am I doing? This is £1,000 and I am putting so much like care and detail into something that suddenly felt like the value exchange was wrong. And I wanted to repackage what I was doing and increase the price range. Plus, I was noticing the clientele was getting good results, but the ones that were getting the best results, like tripling their business and halving their working hours, were those that are a little bit further ahead. So I thought, right, that's it. I just said to my husband, do you know what? Let's do private education. My husband's a pig farmer. Pig prices literally fell out of bed. I want you to imagine we've just spent £2.5 million investment on a pig farm. And now we are losing £50,000 to £80,000 cash a week on pigs. And I said to my husband, don't worry, because my business, look at the run rate. We are 20 to 30K months ahead. Over the next 6 months, I've got this. Like, I know what I'm doing with my group program. I've got this. I'm going to take on private education for our children. It's all good. And I've had this big thing about private education being a pressure that nearly put my parents in divorce. And, you know, it became a massive mindset block. Totally self-sabotaged, ripped up the digital product, stopped the marketing, ripped up, closed
the group. Shut it down, closed the doors entirely. Okay.
Shut it down, reinvent it, reignite it without a clear plan of what that looked like. And it put me under so much pressure. At the same time, my right-hand person went on maternity leave.
Bit inconsiderate.
And I had a newborn at home.
Right.
And I was like, okay, so this is just, you know, follow your instinct. Just go with the flow. What I now realized that to be was just major self-sabotage of doing what I thought was the right thing to do. And then I lost my confidence and way with this next product because I put myself under so much pressure that I then overinvested in coaching and spent £50,000 with one person. And then you feel like at that point, and I've spent hundreds of thousands on coaches and I always take responsibility. But I was listening to the coach saying, don't redo a group thing. Just stick to the one-to-one. Do the hard. And I was like, yeah, this makes sense. You don't need many as many people. Failing to realize my one-to-one was full because of the pipeline of people that came through my small offers and my whole ecosystem that I had just shut off. And that was a major mistake.
How long did it take you to figure out that you made that mistake?
Months.
Like, what are we talking? 3 months, 6 months, 10 months?
6 months.
Wow.
6 months, a year, even to the point
And that's a long time. Forget about the money that you lost. Yeah. At least initially, right? Yeah. From selling people into that program on its own. But the really big danger there is that the sales pipeline, the process of getting people into that higher ticket offer, that's what you really lost. It wasn't like the money that you lost from selling them into the cheaper offer. It was the fact that maybe it took a year or 6 months or 9 months to get people from point A to point B. Yeah. You just eliminated point A entirely. And now when you do make the decision to get going again, that process then begins from day dot all over again, right? So you're not 9 months behind, you're actually 18 months behind in terms of getting them into that higher priced offer. And that's the real danger there more than anything.
Yeah, and I found the biggest danger was what it did to my self-belief, because all of a sudden I couldn't trust my instinct of what was my view versus someone else's view. And I was becoming over-reliant on other people's advice rather than looking internally to my own.
Right.
So that was a major concern, and it felt difficult. And, you know, there were successes along the way. I did launch other programs, and I had this belief. And I think, and I really want to share this, because if you're out here listening at thinking, yes, but I've created something, but the next version is going to be even better, all I would say is you're going to continually evolve in whatever it is you do. That doesn't mean you have to just rip up version one. Because now I just saw a client in Australia who did that program 3 years ago with me. She was in my beta round 3 years ago. And the things she was referencing to me and how relevant they still were in her successful business were amazing. And it just made me think, like, actually, my work hasn't changed so much so that it needed to be something brand new. I just lost faith in what I was doing, where I should have doubled down and thought, this is working. It can be this easy, or easier than, you know, the whole setup process. Why am I making, like, don't make life hard, just double down what you're doing. And instead I ripped up the rule book, decided to start again. And that 100% put me back. Now, does that help me with how I help my clients now? I believe yes. And at the end of the day, the time is just, you know, what is time? I will take these lessons and I've put them into my current business, but it makes me so wary of ever, if I'm thinking, right, just throw the towel into something, like, I'm going to give that up because my instinct's saying start something new. I'm like, no. Double down on what's working, because you made that mistake before.
Yeah, 100%. So let's talk about current day then, as we start to wrap up here. What does the day-to-day look like for Sky today? How many hours do you work? What do you spend doing the majority of the time?
Yeah.
Curious to know. Curious actually just for myself, if not for anyone else.
Yeah. Yes. So I really have created a life where I have total freedom to choose, which for a very indecisive Libra can be a total nightmare at times.
I was going to say, it's a little bit of an oxymoron there to a certain degree.
Exactly. Yeah. It is a big problem. So I believe in looking holistically in everyone's lives. So I have an amazing right-hand woman who helps me at home to be the best wife, mother of my 3-year-old and 6-year-old. I have orchestrated my life so that I don't have to do any of the stuff I don't want to do. I'd love doing the cooking. I don't want to touch a piece of laundry.
Right.
I've just been away in Australia and didn't have my children with me, and they are very happy and didn't even want me at home. So I've created this home life whereby I can do the bits that I love to do and bring me joy, like how I spend time with my children. And I've done the same thing within work. So I have an amazing right-hand woman, Hannah, in my business. People like yourself often think she's my business partner rather than employee, because she cares, I'm allowed to swear, she gives a shit as much as an owner in this business. And I spend my time talking to people, building relationships, working with my clients, creating concepts from the work we teach. What that looks like on a practical level is 2 days a week, I'm with clients, possibly 10 till 4, might be the odd extra VIP day. 1 week a month, I am completely free to do whatever I want and have creative time. But I choose to work often. I love what I do. Mm-hmm. And I have total flexibility within that. I have an office on the farm because I love getting out of the house. And
working walking 200 meters to the office.
200 meters to the office.
As you wave to your in-laws or whatever.
I was like, literally walk past my husband's office, wave there, wave at my in-laws. And, you know, and it's very diverse. One minute I'm like going and doing a food shop because my mother-in-law unfortunately had a stroke. So, you know, I'm helping out at home, or I'm helping out on the farm. And it's really, I've created a life whereby I can choose how I spend my time. And like I said, the biggest problem I have with that is deciding, well, what is it I want to do today? Today's a slightly different day. I'm doing a bit more client work than usual, but that's because I've been off 2 weeks. But I tend to have quite a structure. Team day on a Monday, free day on a Wednesday, Friday, clients on a Tuesday, Thursday.
Love it. Awesome. I got to ask, how many pigs do you have on the farm at any one time?
9,000 to 10,000.
That's mad. That is a lot of pigs. Because, I mean, I'm a countryside guy as well. We're in Cambridgeshire. And I mean, we've got horses everywhere, and we've got a massive pig farm as well, not too far from us as well. And we drive by it often with the kids, and we're like, you know, how many pigs? Count them quickly. And obviously they never can, but that's a lot of pigs.
Well, actually in pig farms, it's not that big.
Is it really?
Yeah, no, it wouldn't be one of the biggest. Not at all. It's kind of like on the medium scale. Although I would say just British farmers, we need to support because they're all going out of business.
Yes, we do.
So we are becoming more of the smaller ones because the little ones can't afford to keep going.
I have a big love of the countryside, as you probably know. And it never ceases to amaze me when I speak with people within the farming industry, agriculture industry, horticultural industry, even as well, to a certain degree. It's amazing how many people are having to diversify with their land, what they're doing. Everything from solar panel farms right the way down to glamping and everything in between. You mentioned that, and we're going very off topic, so I apologize for the listeners here, but just stick with me, guys. We'll bring it back around in a minute. I'm curious to know, like, how hard has it been over the last 4 or 5 years for you and the family? Have you had to diversify? Have you kind of dug your heels in even further? Or what have you done to kind of get over the last few years?
Actually makes me feel really emotional you saying that. It's been awful. I'm also sat here, come from a very privileged standpoint. We live in Oxfordshire. We own our farm, like it's quite highly mortgaged. So the bank owns a lot of our farm.
Sure.
But, you know, we do come from a privileged position, and you could never have felt it more than in COVID with the space we had and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
But farmers are asset rich and cash poor. And the last few years has been difficult. I think we all saw through the pandemic how much we rely on, or we should rely on, having food on our doorstep and how important it is to be able to grow the vegetables in our garden to provide for ourselves or have our chickens. And, you know, it is true. And we need to look after farms. But we've got now 4 families this farm has to provide for. We are diversifying to the max. It has been incredibly, and it is incredibly difficult, which is then partly, as I talked before, about put the pressure onto my own business and how I support things. Mm-hmm. We're very lucky that we have a lovely farmhouse and all of that stuff, but it's
been
very
a struggle.
Badly, a struggle. It's been a real struggle. And then what happens is the stress, and as you know, the stress affects us as individuals and as a close family. I don't think there's been a single week where one person hasn't been in hospital. We're only a family of 4 and our immediate young children, but it has been challenge after challenge after challenge thrown at us. And I think that's really had an effect on my mindset, and it's something I've been really working on the last year because it's made it very scarce, like very scarce mindset around farming. Yeah, very poor, very difficult conditions. And at the end of the day, you know, you can't just stop. You can't just stop breeding pigs. Like there are thousands in the field that need to be looked after and fed and watered. Right. Doesn't matter how high the price is. If you think about what we've had, I'm just going to end on this point. But then COVID, obviously you couldn't expect that. Ukraine war then put the whole price of pig food and wheat through the roof. Some farmers really benefited from that short term, but then replanting is really difficult. And then what was the other thing? Then obviously the fuel crisis and stuff that we've had has just impacted our costs like this. So it's been very difficult. Light is at the end of the tunnel.
Yes, indeed. And I mean, part of that light is the fact that obviously you have continued to grow your business and serve your clients and provide for your family, which I think you kind of need a little bit of a high five for. So there you go.
My poor husband and their family and all our family, they literally live and breathe what I did. I found my husband's right-hand person last month.
Just I love Christmas. That.
So his business ran smoothly when we were away in Australia as well. And he was saying to us, like, I just never thought this would be possible. It's always possible, James. It's always possible. So they hear a lot of my too.
I bet they do. So, okay. So to wrap this up then, I always ask this final question of my guests because I think it's a fun one, if nothing else. What's one thing on your bucket list that you want ticked off in the next 12 months? One thing. It can be little or small.
I would love to. Well, I would love to speak at an international event. I kind of did that in Australia, but it's given me the bug to. So I would love to run and host an international event in the next 12 months.
Okay. And where would you run it?
Oh, gosh, I haven't got that far down the process. I need to think about that one.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Scotland count.
I guess Scotland can count. It's got an airport.
No.
Or two,
I'm going to Arizona for a work thing in April, so perhaps it's there.
Very cool. All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on. I wish you all the best. You've got a great story to tell, and I think you're doing amazing things. So good job on everything. And for you guys tuning in, if you want to find out a little bit more about Sky and what she's all about, we're going to have show notes and links and all that good stuff. So just head over to youpreneur.com and check it out over there. Sky, thank you so much for being with me.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for having this conversation. I've really enjoyed it.
And now it's time for Chris's Coaching Corner, where we hear his thoughts and suggestions to help his guest go further, faster.
So when it comes to Sky, there's a lot going really, really well for her here. And actually, I feel like she's hit a little bit of a stride in terms of what she wants to be doing, how she wants to be doing it, but most importantly, who she wants to be doing it for and with in regards to her female agency owner clientele. Now, with that being said, though, although she's quite happy doing what she's doing, I think there are definitely a couple of areas here that she can be focusing on to be able to go a little deeper with the work that she's doing and the impact that she's having. So first and foremost, I believe a book is definitely in Sky's future. That is for sure. Sure, yes, it might be a slightly niched down book, specifically focused at agency owners who are female. And by the way, there are plenty of them out there. But the fact is, yes, it's a niche down title for a niche down audience, but it's only going to serve her even more to become a bigger expert in the industry and to be seen as somebody with a true voice in that industry as it continues to grow and develop as well. Secondly, on the back of that, she also brought up on more than one occasion her love for speaking on stage, for being able to present workshops and masterclasses and webinars and all those things as well. So my advice to Sky would also be to spend some more time honing in on that craft of becoming a really, really strong public speaker. Whether that means her getting up on more stages and doing more workshops and keynotes, or maybe just spending more time learning that craft from somebody who's been there and done it a few more times than her, it doesn't matter. One way or the other, I think it's going to be one of those skill sets that's going to help her incredibly when it comes to building the business of you, as I call it, in the future in terms of having more impact with what she does and obviously having more sustainable growth as an entrepreneur herself as well. But Sky's doing a lot right, isn't she, right? But I feel like there's always room for improvement, and a book and speaking are the two things that I would suggest that she zoom in on a little bit more in the coming months and years. So I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Sky Barber. We'll be back at you again with another episode real soon. Until then, take fantastic care and bye-bye for now.
Thank you for tuning in to Youpreneur FM. Why not head over to our official website at youpreneur.com to access all our tools and resources essential to building, marketing, and monetizing a future-proof business based around your expertise. We'll see you next time.